Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, April 26, 2019. A South Sudan opposition leader is denying allegations that he was fired.
This is basically a process to detain me, it's basically a process to demoralize me, it's a process to limit my progress. And I am not against them either, those who are against me. I am in for the South Sudanese people.
And some South Sudanese women worry about the prospects for peace in their country.
This time IGAD has called them so that they discuss and agree. The government should listen to what RIAC is saying. RIAC says if the armies are not unified, it is not coming because the security is not granted.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudanese opposition leader is once again in the news. Peter Mayen Majongdit, chairman of the Liberal People Party, is denying that an umbrella group he represents at the National Pre-Transitional Committee fired him today. Mayen said the alleged dismissal letter seen by this program was written by some individuals within the coalition of opposition parties in Juba. Mayen claims he is being targeted by politicians who are not happy with his work.
Nobody has suspended my membership. I'm still the chairperson of the umbrella of political parties, and I'm still representing the political parties in line with the revised disagreement.
How did you become the chairperson of the other political parties? Were you elected? Were you selected? Were you nominated? And who nominated you?
Actually a representative of the other political parties. This is during the negotiation talk when there were when other political parties were met together to be called OPE, and OPE that was other political parties and SOA and other groups. South Sudan has 27 political parties, and these 27 political parties must be represented properly.
You are saying that you were representing the other political parties, and five members from the 28 have written a letter suspending you from representing them at the talks. Is that what you're telling me?
Only five out of 27 political parties, they have been. And those five, they are not even the leaders of their parties. And you cannot hold a meeting at the back door that you go and sit, have your drink, and then the five of you write a letter, and then you see the media. Political parties' activities require transparency and accountability.
Is it by mistake that you have been of late in the news? I also talked to you the other week about a letter from the Mbesh Hotel requesting that you should be moved out of the hotel. Why are you in the news?
What I know is that this is basically a process to defame me, it's basically a process to demoralize me, it's a process to limit my progress. And I am not against them either, those who are against me. I am in for the South Sudanese people, and what I am pushing for, I want South Sudan to be peaceful, and South Sudanese has to have a breathing space. And I will continue to remain in my position, irrespective of the disconnections that comes up in a daily basis.
You said you will continue with your ambitions to lead the people of South Sudan, but there are some moral issues that are being cited in some of these letters that have been flying left and right. So how do you react to that?
Those moral issues are absolutely not true. I have a clean conscience, and I have not committed any crime. And nobody has ever come up accusing me, and I have never been convicted in any court of law as an evidence.
You also admitted that the Inspector General of the police wrote a letter for your arrest.
No, the Inspector General did not write the letter. You could be accused by anybody, but every accused person is free of guilt and still proved by the court of law. And all these are being framed at this very crucial time.
They are accusing you. There's an accusation against you that a married woman was found in your room, in your hotel room. That is still standing out there, Honorable Mayen.
But there's nothing at the end of the day. So basically, I am being accused and having a new story from time to time. First accused of why should I let a woman to hotel, and second and now 10 people, about 5 people go on and sit down and come up with a letter and circulate it, and then the media runs that. So these are all not true, and these are accusations, and they are not really holding any ground.
And how else would you have loved the media to handle the situation? Because these people also have the right to air time, just like I'm speaking to you.
The media should handle the situation the way you are handling it. When you hear an accusation about anybody or anything that is about someone then, before you publish a random story or before you do anything about it, you should balance the story. You should ask the accused person and get his version, and you run the two articles together. But the media here in South Sudan, apparently, they are only running one side version of the story.
That's Peter Mayen Majongdit, leader of the Liberal People Party. He also represents an umbrella of opposition groups at the National Pre-Transitional Committee, a body tasked with implementing the September peace deal. He was speaking with me from Juba earlier today. Some South Sudanese women are calling on President Salva Kiir and SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar to work together to fully implement the revitalized peace agreement. Leaders of the parties who signed the deal have been invited by IGAD to Addis Ababa next week to discuss the status of the implementation of the deal and the way forward. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Some women say they worry the peace deal is unraveling after hearing that President Kiir and Machar differed over whether to form a unity government by the May 12 deadline is stipulated in the peace deal or to delay the process for 6 months. Speaking in Arabic, Juba resident Kiden Sarafino says she was losing hope that the peace deal would be implemented until she heard about the IGAD meeting.
This time IGAD has called them so that they discuss and agree. The government should listen to what Riek is saying. Riek says if the armies are not unified, he is not coming because the security is not granted. We at the grassroots also agree with him because if these soldiers are not unified, how are they going to be together? We are tired and we need peace.
Sarafino wonders whether the two principals have reflected on their recent meeting with Pope Francis at the Vatican. Sarafino says all she wants is for the two leaders to restore lasting peace so she can return to farming.
I want God to be in their midst in this meeting because we are already tired of war. For how long are they going to rival over this position? Commodities are expensive in the market, and I am a widow. We watch on TV when the Pope kissed their feet. Let's remember that the kisses was to bring blessings for them to bring peace to South Sudan.
Speaking in Arabic, another Juba resident who prefers to be identified only as Ikhlash for fear of government reprisals says the government should give the opposition a chance before forming the unity government.
Let them be given some period of 1 to 2 months so that they can think and come up with something good for the people of South Sudan. I think if they are given time, they will choose peace since this is more about security, ensuring arrangements are in place.
Amer Manyo Deng, chairperson of South Sudan's Women Bloc, which signed the agreement, says the leaders should use the forthcoming meeting to figure out how to move the peace process forward.
If South Sudan has been affected by the conflict of the war, and it also affected by the economic crisis, we are also affected politically with our international partners. So since the good relationship with our friends all over the world, the international community had broken down, the two leaders, apart from the other parties, the OPP, the Umbrella, the FDs, we need the two principal, and especially the government of the Transitional National Unity and the SPLM-IO in opposition to look into these issues critically.
Deng is encouraging the parties to form the unity government by the May 12 deadline and says the rest of the issues, including security arrangements, can be accomplished so long as there is a will to do so.
What is important is to trust each other. Let us build more trust. Is the one that will make us to implement the agreement, then what is really, yes, maybe they missed the time not to implement the requirement that are supposed to be done, the security arrangement and all this. And we, the citizen, we are happy with the security we are in now, because if you cannot hear the gunshot here and there, if you cannot hear ambushes here and there, then there is already peace. The other part that is left, it is them to work it out. To work it out, they can still sit down and come up with a very nice mechanism.
Following today's cabinet meeting, Information Minister Michael Makuei told reporters in Juba that after the May 2nd and 3rd Addis Ababa meeting, the IGAD Council of Ministers will meet in Juba on May 5th and 6th to discuss the formation of South Sudan's revitalized transitional government of national unity. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
A legal expert in Juba is blaming the South Sudan government for handling a case involving activist Peter Bier Ajak and six others who have been in detention. A court in Juba today acquitted one of the seven suspects accused, but charged Bier, Karbino Wall, and four others for causing insecurity and violence. A lawyer says the government should not focus on secondary charges rather than the primary offenses for which the suspects were arrested. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Soldier Peter Albino, one of the accused, was acquitted by the court this morning. The charges against the six other accused were read out and confirmed by lead judge Sumaya Sali Abdallah. Abdallah charged activist Bier under Section 48 and 80, subsection 2 of the South Sudan Penal Code, which spells out offenses such as disseminating false information and creating violence. She also charged Wall under Sections 48, 67, 72, 79, and 80, subsection 2 of the South Sudan Penal Code, and under Section 57 of the National Security Act, which details offenses related to breaking into a gun store, breaking into a detention cell, possession of guns, and creating insecurity, respectively. Judge Abdallah says the charges are regarding an incident the detained individuals allegedly committed on October 7, 2018 at National Security Headquarters, commonly known as Blue House. Defense lawyer Philip Anyang says he is surprised by the court's decision to formally charge his clients.
These are things that were never expected because from the facts of the case, from the prosecution's case, from all the witnesses that testified, from the evidence that was produced by the prosecution, nothing links Peter to the incident that happened on the 7th of October at the National Security. So the surprise that comes with these charges are shocking to all of us. These are charges that are totally in conflict with the Constitution.
Lawyer Rachel Malual criticized the government for the way it handled the case, describing the legal process as unfair. Malual says the government failed to explain to the public why it arrested Bier and his co-accused in the first place.
You cannot take me into detention cell and you keep me for over 24 hours and probably for more than 6 months. You don't take me to court. You don't give me any due process. And then you capitalize on what I commit, you know, in the detention cell. It seems like there was nothing against them, and therefore they were made to commit, or they were coerced to commit what they have done just to convict them, because what they were looking at the end of the day is to lock them up.
Malual also says it was wrong for the government to detain the seven men for more than 6 months without ever charging them in a court of law, something he says infringes on people's rights and demonstrates the state's failure to respect the laws it enacted.
Seemingly, there was no investigation done, and the government is not able to provide as to why these people were arrested. But then they came and capitalized on what is committed after 6 months in the detention cell.
The defense teams have maintained their clients are innocent. Malwal says the way the state is handling the case of the seven accused sent shockwaves across South Sudan and raised questions about the state's respect for the rights of the citizens and its understanding of due process.
Because if you live in a country where anybody can just arrest you and take you to his own detention cell, make you commit a crime, and tomorrow the justice system in our country will not look at it, not look at the processes, and then that means all of us are in danger simply because you don't have an intention to do anything, but somebody will create an environment to incriminate you and be able to spend, destroy your character in the beginning, and then after that make you to be sentenced and make it look like you are a criminal.
Judge Abdallah and her team are expected to decide next Monday whether to acquit the remaining six individuals who were arrested but not charged with the initial crimes. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at Sudan's military rule and the demands for civilian government. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
can you forgive and forget?
It depends. It depends on the situation or the fault that you did for me. Sometimes I forgive and forget. Other times I can't forget. I forgive, but I can't forget.
Yes, of course I forgive and I forget. First of all, if I forgive, my mind becomes clear to each and everything.
Of course I can forgive and forget. Reason being, there are very many people who harm us, but we shouldn't always keep it at heart.
Forgiving helps because sometimes we overlook some other things, because if, for instance, I do not forgive and forget, then what if the same applies to me?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. For the past 2 weeks, protesters in Sudan have demanded the military handover power to civilians. Talks between the military and the civilians appear to be making progress. The protesters are now directing their anger at a new target, Arab governments, for what they say is interference in Sudan's internal affairs. Naba Mohyeddin reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Sudanese activists protesting, but not against military rule. These protesters were outside the Egyptian embassy in Khartoum Thursday, calling for an end to interference by Arab governments. Sudanese activists wound up social media campaigns Friday, calling for more protesters to rally outside embassies and consulates. Demonstrations also continued outside army headquarters, where protesters like Bushra Ahmad raised signs against intervention by Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. This revolution is a fully Sudanese revolution, says Ahmad. We don't need any guardian telling us what to do and what not to. We know our country and are able to lead it ourselves, he says. Such sentiments have been growing among protesters since a joint Saudi Emirate delegation visited Sudan on April 16. The visit raised eyebrows as it came just days after the military ousted President Omar al-Bashir from 3 decades in power. The delegations announced $3 billion in aid, which was welcomed by the military, but rejected by protesters suspicious of their past support for Bashir and other Islamist and authoritarian leaders. At Friday prayers in Khartoum, religious leaders told crowds of protesters outside army headquarters to refuse intervention from foreign countries. Protesters have camped outside the headquarters since April 6, originally to call for Bashir's removal, now for an end to military rule. At a tent near the sit-in, former soldier turned protesters Mohammed Musa and other veterans warned about Gulf countries.
He says they totally refuse Gulf intervention and Saudi Emirates intervention in Sudan and in transitional military council affairs. They have their own interest in mind, not Sudan's, when it comes to Sudan troops deployed to the war in Yemen. Hundreds of Sudanese soldiers have died in Yemen as the Bashir government supported Sudan's Arab allies in the war there. Political analyst Al-Fatih Mahmoud says Bashir's removal has raised concerns among Gulf states that Turkey and Qatar could give new influence in Sudan. Bashir's regime was dealing with the two camps, but now Sudan has to belong to one camp, he says. So Saudi, the Emirates and Egypt have tried to attract the new Sudan, especially with the existence of former agreements and the removal of Islamists from the scene. Sudan's protests erupted December over bread and fuel shortages and soon morphed into calls for Bashir to step down. While protests continue, the Transitional Military Council is negotiating with protest leaders on handing power to a civilian council before the end of a self-declared two-year mandate. Naba Muhiddin for VOA News, Khartoum.
Photographic images from Sudan's protests have been plastered across websites and newspapers globally for the past several weeks. An independent Sudanese photographer who captured a widely shared photo says the aim of the Sudanese people is to be in control of telling their own story. Ayen Deng-Bior has more for VOA from Washington.
Almost instantly, 22-year-old Ala Salah became an icon of the Sudanese revolution after a picture of her chanting among protesters was taken weeks ago. She stood in the middle of a large crowd, draped in a white tobe, wearing large gold moon-shaped earrings, leading the crowd in words of resistance. On the other side of the camera was Lana Haroon, who took the photo. She says she didn't expect her photo to go viral or have the impact it has since had.
I published this photo on my Facebook account, and in 10 minutes, I found, more than 500 share for my photo. After this, there is one Sudanese girl, she's living outside Sudan. She communicate with me on Messenger, and she said, I send your photo, I put your photo on my Twitter, and everybody asking who take this photo, and after this she advised me to put this photo on my Twitter account if I have it.
Haroon posted the photo on Twitter on Monday, April 8th, and within hours, she says, she received requests from media houses all over the world who wanted to track down the woman in the photo. Haroon's photo brought attention to Sudan's months-long protest. U.S.-based media like BuzzFeed and Fox News turned their focus to Sudan. Haroon says the photo strengthened interest in Sudan, which in turn helped turn the pressure on former President Omar al-Bashir. As the world watched, Haroon says the photo gave her the power to frame the narrative.
The only media was stand with our revolution in Sudan is social media, and it is from Sudanese people, just Sudanese people. There is, a little from outside, but little people, they stand with us, but it wasn't, make reflection and all. But because there is, photographers, Sudanese photographers inside inside the protesting area all the time and sitting place, they try to reflect the situation in Sudan. And sometimes they make videos and all. And definitely because of my photo and other photos of photographers or this, we reflect our situation in Sudan. And after this, my photo, maybe it was the most famous one. And after this, a lot of things changed. And now everyone is know what's happening in Sudan.
The photo has brought Ala Salah into the limelight, but it has also impacted Haroon.
Because of my photo, there is a good things happened to me because I can reflect my Sudan situation that time. And this is make things, I can help my my country and my people. Because that time there is no media everywhere. And because of this photo, I can speak everywhere in the world about the situation, the real situation in Sudan.
Haroon says photographers in Sudan were uniquely positioned to tell the history of the movement through photos and shape the narrative they wanted the world to see. Haroon and Salah, whose stories are intertwined with the photo, have spoken over the phone, but they have not met yet. Ayen Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
Feminism has been defined as the theory of the political, economic, and social equality of the sexes and the organized activity on behalf of women's rights and interests. But the idea of feminism can vary depending on where you live. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo looks into what feminism means for Africans.
From Nairobi to Conakry, women across Africa are demanding change in attitudes towards sexual harassment, fair wages, access to land, and equal opportunities for political leadership. But they're doing it in their own way, says Gwendolyn Michael, professor of anthropology and foreign service at Georgetown University and author of a book on African feminism.
In the U.S., women often think feminism means I alone determine what's best for me. But African feminism is very much a different thing. It's about how women interpret their interests and empowerment within the context of where they live and their cultural values.
Feminism has historically had negative connotations on the African continent, says Shingirai Mutera, who teaches African feminist theory at Rhodes University in South Africa.
Feminism, one, is considered to be a title that is given to middle-class people or people who are white. There's also an attachment to feminism that feminism is anti-men and anti-African cultural systems and anti-African traditional practices.
Advocating for women's right on the basis of equality of the sexes can be intimidating for some men, but American University professor Kweku Nwama says it shouldn't be the case.
And it starts with not being afraid of the word feminist, and understanding that what's right for our women is right for us as a society, as a continent in general.
He says some of the problems require a shift in cultural attitudes, and those take a long time. But some countries aren't waiting. Rwanda, for example, has the largest share of seats in parliament in the world held by women.
Rwanda is a terrific example of what public policy can do to help women. They use quotas. Then on the other end of the spectrum, you see countries like Tanzania, where the government says you can't go to school if you're pregnant.
Dr. Michael says things are evolving on the continent. People like Kenya's environmental political activist Wangari Maathai and South Africa's anti-apartheid activist Winnie Mandela are seen as great feminist inspirations for Mutera. But is being a feminist critical in the empowerment of women in general?
The simple answer for that would be no, because many women across the decades have done work that is what we would consider to be feminist.
She says the lack of the feminism label in some cases doesn't negate the credibility of their work. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
That report by Mariama Diallo from Washington brings us to the end of our show for this week. We now leave you with the song Anina Tabanin by Yafa J. Pro Julius T.J.
Yafa J. Anabi Kore Kalam Nas Gere Baramin Bele Kalamasaki Nas Keti Gere Baramin Yeri Nasigere para min tore tore, I no fi juba, I no fi bor, I no fi malaka, kele daro I no fi morobo, you no binti kam, oman tabani, tani fi Congo, tani fi Kenya, tani fi Uganda, oman ababele.
We've been listening to Yafa Pro Julius TJ with the song Anina Tabanin. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Have a peaceful weekend, and we invite you to join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Anina
ebu masakir asan biro babele telina deya tulubi alina kuludamu wahi kerena sibu masakir de katula kwa